We're all back, more or less. We'll continue just because we don't want to keep you here forever either. So this is when I had my two thoughts at the same time before. I was looking for this and I thought it was already in the computer. If we do a temp, I'm going to leave it like this because it'll only be up for a minute and this way the slides don't move on me. If we do a temp and we get this, are we happy? Some of you are happy, some of you are not happy. Might be having a cold.
Might be having a? Might have a cold.
Might have a cold. Why?
Negative pressure.
Negative pressure, okay. Where is the peak? What is the peak at?
Minus
150, maybe minus 180, possibly. Okay, fair enough. So possibly has a cold because it's a little bit negative. Is it within normal limits?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's within normal limits. So for the screening, do they pass or do they fail? They pass. Okay, fair enough. Oh, that's a very good slide. Okay, hang on a sec. It's even better. Let's look at this one first. So, really bad, eh? I'm sorry. You know what? Just bear with me for a minute. So, here we have the outline, and I will tell you where it is. It's at plus 50, so 0 is right here. It's at plus 50, so don't look at that slide just yet. So are we happy with that? Plus 50, I'll cheat. I'll tell you that...
ear canal volume is pretty high, isn't it?
The ear canal volume is along here, and I will tell you that it is 2.61.
High,
especially if this is a child. So the ear canal is high. The pressure is at 55 plus 55. Talk to me about this ear.
If the volume is very high, then it's likely to be measuring the middle ear as well.
It could be measuring the middle ear as well because it is a high-ish volume. Is it very, very high? What are our limits for ear canal volume again?
0.2.
So we're just outside of that. So possibly it's measuring a little bit more than the outer ear canal. If it was an adult, I would not be in panic mode. The pressure, what is the pressure telling us?
The upper limit.
Upper limit. So it's within range or not within range? Within range. What would you do with this person if you only saw that side? If you could actually see that side, what would you do with it?
Take it again, just to ensure that you...
Okay, take it again. That's a good point. And if your ear canal volume came down a little bit closer to 2, would you feel a little bit more comfortable with that? Yeah, you could have pushed it further. I'm not sure that I would be in huge, huge panic mode, but I might just make a little note of what I'm seeing. The other one, so this is the left ear. The right ear, I'll tell you, is 4.04 is the volume, and it's a very, very flat line. There's no peak at all, so I'm getting no pressure measurement, and I'm getting 4.4 mils of volume, outer ear canal. So talk to me about that ear. An infection? Okay, possibly.
A large perforation.
A large perforation, why?
Because of the excessive volume.
Excessive volume. So I think we agree that this is very clear in terms that, you know, four, remember I mentioned earlier, I test some children, I'm very, very close to 4, and this is 4.04. So this is a little bit more in your face in terms of this is a really big volume. And when you test and have a perforation where you're measuring completely the outer ear canal and the middle ear together, you're definitely going to get values closer to that. Go ahead.
What would be an indication that you didn't have a seal?
You haven't talked about that yet, because usually if there's a perforation, you won't get a seal, right?
Okay, fair enough. So the question is, what would be an indication that you don't have a seal?
Aside from the red light going.
Yeah, exactly. She brings up a good point. If there's a perforation in the ear canal, in the eardrum, often it makes it more difficult to get a proper seal. So you try and you try and you try, and the machine is either not making the measurement for you, or the red light's going on. Like, it's just, it's giving you a lot of trouble. So what happens if you don't get the seal? So let's say we were trying to test this ear and we never got to this result because we would just try and try and try and we could not get the seal. Then we're not really, we've looked with our light, we see something that we think is a perforation, but we can't get to this result on paper. So what do we do?
Like, differentiate if we don't have a seal because we're not well placed, and when we don't have a seal because there's a perforation, or just what do we do if there's a perforation so we can do this test?
It's going to be hard for you to know the difference between, you know, for why are you not getting a seal necessarily. But let's say you were testing this ear, you could not get this result on paper, so you're not getting that. And you're not getting a seal, and when you look in their ear, you think you see something that could be a perforation. What are you going to do? You're going to make a note? You're going to make a very big note! Okay. You're going to make a very, very big note. You're going to refer them. If you see something that you think is a perforation, and now you're not getting a seal, and you try and you try, and maybe even your colleague tries, because that's okay too. You know, it's okay that you're not getting it and the next person maybe gets it or doesn't get it. But if two people have tried and you're not getting a good seal, I think it's fair at that point to say, we just cannot get this, and that's okay. But if you think that you've seen a perforation, then you would definitely refer on. You can continue with the screening. You can continue with the pure tone part of the screening, because just because they have a perforation doesn't necessarily mean that their hearing is suddenly down. They may very well hear those beeps at 20 decibels. Okay, but you would definitely make a note. You would want someone to take a look at that eardrum with better equipment.
Should you only do the TIMP if you're able to see the tympanic membrane and make sure that there's no perforations? Or what if you're not able to see it? Should you do it to take the rest?
Should you do the tympanometry if you cannot see the eardrum? It depends on why you can't see the eardrum. So you look in, you're going to have to use your judgment. If you look in the ear and you cannot see the eardrum because there's wax and there's a lot of it, at that point, I think doing tympanometry, I mean, even if you did try to do it, either you're going to push the wax in further, and if you don't, you're not going to get a very good result anyway. So even if you work really hard to do it, it's not going to give you a reliable result. I think that you'll have to use your judgment. Hopefully, you will be able to at least catch a glimpse of the eardrum enough to tell you that the ear canal is free of debris. And once you can confirm that, and I think that you will be comfortably be able to do that for every child, at least be able to say that even though I don't see the eardrum very well because this ear canal is so small, I can see that there is nothing in the ear canal and I can at least try to do a TIMP. Okay? So now you do get a seal. And you do get this flat line, very large volume, so we think we have a perforation. May also have an ear infection, but we're sort of almost beyond that in terms that the ear infection may very well have caused a very large perforation. At this point, you probably don't have the parents there, so you don't know much background information. So you're really referring. You're really sending them off to take a look at what this big hole in the eardrum is all about. Okay? What's going on here? So it tells us that our peak is at minus 245, and it's...
Because it's irregular, could it be that the person, talked or swallowed or...
Yes, it could be that the person talked or swallowed. And so now you've done it three times, and all three times you get this result. Yes.
Liquid?
Suggestive of liquid. Yes. So it's, we're getting, I think we all agree that this is definitely negative middle ear pressure. We're definitely outside of that range. Yes? Okay. So definitely something going on in the middle ear. A little bit of liquid, a lot of liquid at that point, you do not really have all that answer, but the ear, nose, and throat doctor can go look. Okay, so are you referring them? Mm-hmm. You're referring them.
Okay. In this graph, the fact that your peak is not very clear, is that indicative of the, like, not so much flexibility that you're getting in the...
Yes.
Is that what...
Yes. Is the reason that we're not seeing... Because even though it's telling us it's at minus 245, it's reading that little blip right there as the peak. So it could be more or less. So why don't we have this really nice peak? Probably because the eardrum is not fully extending and fully coming back, that we're not getting that full range of movement of the eardrum because of the liquid behind it. So we're getting this funny looking scribble. Yes? Okay. All right. We continue. Click. Yes. Okay. So, remember to think about what you are seeing, okay? This child is not an ear. This child is two ears and sniffles and coughing and blowing their nose. So take a look at what you've got. You will have results on paper that hopefully make sense. If they don't make sense, take a step back and try to figure out why they don't make sense. You're looking in their ear. Is everything normal? Yes. Great. Check. Okay. Is there something obviously wrong? If you can tell that there is something obviously wrong, even if you can't tell what it is. So, for example, the infamous wax, you know, you see something, but maybe you can't say for sure it's Crayola banana yellow. Maybe you just want to be able to make a note that there is something in the ear canal that needs to be removed. Okay. Then you do your emittance, and you are either within your normal limits or you are not. So if you're within your normal limits, you're very happy and you indicate that. And if you are not, then you want to take a closer look and say, okay, is my ear canal volume very small, very large? What could that mean? You know, so just, you really want to be thinking through this and not let them just become two ears, next two ears, next two ears, okay? We talk here about retesting. Anne, what's the situation right now and when the children fail? Do they get to go retest?
They rarely
just no?
do.
They rarely
because
do.
They're usually going to different schools. It's a little bit up to the SLPs how they determine what schools they're going to. I do know that in this case we're going to get a lot of results that would have been appropriate for a retest before referring. That's one of the issues with the screening. So we just leave it up to the SLPs how they use the resources for the initial screening.
Okay. So you leave it up to the SLP of the school to...
On the cases and the referrals.
Okay. So all that information goes to the SLP of the school and then you leave it in their hands. Mm-hmm. They're very capable hands, I'm sure.
That's right.
Well, I mean... It all falls on them, lucky them. And what's nice is that as we do this over and over, you kind of, well, first of all, you get a rapport with the school, you kind of know what's expected of you, they know what's expected of them, and you work together. So if one year something doesn't work so well, then you make modifications until it's a nice oiled machine.
How do you talk to the child, for example, if he has Crayola in the ear? Do you say, like, do you really put, like...
You say absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
You know, if the parents were there, that would be very different.
Okay.
But you, because if you say, you have something that looks like banana yellow crayon in your ear, they will dig at that ear all day, okay? You say nothing. You say, oh, that's interesting, and you write it down. Okay?
You ask for pain if you have, like, a flat tympanometry or...
You could.
Okay.
You could. You know what? Usually they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. If it really is that painful, they're probably not even in school that day. So the kids that are there are usually not in pain.
Oh, somebody's shaking their head over there. They're in school whether they're in pain or not.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so... You have a chart, and so Anne passed out a handout that McGill put together. So we're very fortunate. I mean, different people have taught this over the years, and we basically hang on to everybody's information. So one of the audiologists that used to work at the Montreal Oral School, Donnell, had done quite a bit of that handout at one point. So we keep, you know, as people come up with different charts and different things, we hang on to that information for dear life. But Anne is holding up here the chart where you'll be making all your little check marks and your notes and so forth. You know, be comfortable with your chart, because there's really nothing worse than having a really squirmy child and you're trying to figure out, okay, am I in the left column, the right column? You know, I mean, obviously as you do them, it will become a little bit easier for you, but be comfortable with your own material so that when you run into that child that's not doing what you want them to do, that you can kind of almost do at least your stuff a little bit more comfortably.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you're about to get to this. I was just wondering if there's a point where we stop after incomplete testing. Because, like, we stopped after the otoscopy. Would we stop after incomplete testing and not?
So we do otoscopy and we continue. So the ear canal is good. Now we do admittance and we have a flat line, for example. Would we stop? I mean, I think, and maybe someone else can help add information. I mean, I think I would only stop if for some reason now this child is in excruciating pain. I can't imagine that that would happen. It would be extremely rare, but it would have to be something about that child that would make me, like that where the person is very, very upset about something that would make me now stop the test.
Okay, but otherwise, even if they fail admittance test, you still do peer.
Yes, because they could have a slightly funny tympanogram and still have pretty close to normal thresholds. Go ahead.
Sorry to jump in again, but yep. A lot of the schools are going to find kids with special needs, and a lot of them won't even let you go near their ears or near with the headphones or anything. And keeping them on task is very difficult as well. So sometimes you just have to weigh your pros and cons.
Yes, well, and that's a good point. So she's... sorry, I'm just going to repeat just for the microphone. So she is saying that, you know, if you have children who have special needs, already you're dealing with issues where they may not want to wear the headphones for you. Keeping them on task for more than just a few seconds at a time is difficult. So, yes, you will get as much information as you can comfortably without distress for the child and distress for yourself, okay? And you make a note and you tell, you know, you indicate why you could not continue. And maybe that is a child that if we feel there's a higher risk, maybe then we'll say, you know, we'll recommend that the parents actually have them have a full hearing test.
So we test them for tympanometry, we test the reflex too, or not?
No, not in a screening. Okay. Not in a screening. Okay. Yes?
Is there a time where you would retest without referring? Or is there something going on you always prefer? Or might an SLP decide, okay, I'm going to come back to the child now?
If the situation is such that you can, you know, so you've tested and now you're able to come back in 4 to 6 weeks, then yes, if it was, especially if it was one of these curves, well, where you're looking at something and it just, the curve looks just like it has maybe some fluid behind the eardrum, but there doesn't seem to be an ear infection, the child's not in pain, that would be fine to say, you know, we're just going to retest,
instead
you know,
refine,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Again, I think you're going to have to use your common sense a little bit. But if you have a flat tympanogram, you really want the doctor to look at that, because that could take a long time to really resolve itself. It may never resolve itself. And these are the kids that really need some kind of link to ENT, because if it's happening now, the odds are it might very well happen again. And so they need a file where they have a way in. Go ahead. No, that's fine.
In your package here, there's the letter to the parents that sent home for permission. I don't see it in this package, but is there a line, I don't remember from last year if I added it myself, a line that asks if this child is prone to ear infections or is he followed by an ENT?
I don't believe there is.
Because that letter helps.
But we could put that in the letter.
Yeah, I think it's important.
That directly to the SLPs.
Right.
Send out to your kids. If you want me to put that in, by all means, I'm happy to do that.
Because that's sort of, in one sense, it's good, mm-hmm. because you see these kids, and if it says on their form, this child is being followed by an ENT, they might see something interesting. And on the other hand, it might account for
reasons that they might have difficulty with the screening.
So I'm just going to summarize. So basically the idea being that if we can add a little bit of information to our forms prior so that the parents can indicate, is the child being followed by an ENT, gives you some indication. If the answer is yes, they're not usually just being followed by an ENT just for fun. So they've had something in the past that makes it that either they've had recurrent ear infections. So when you see that, it tells you there's a bit of history. And if you're seeing something funny, this is fairly simple. They're just going to go back to that ENT because there's already a link there. And so it's just a matter of adding that to the form. So that's a good point, and that's a good example of, you know, getting feedback and adding that in if needed. Yes?
Hi, I'm doing pure-term testing. I noticed the 20 decibels. Because it's not part of the environment, is it possible that you have to push it up higher for, like, the normal level because it's background noise?
What's the room we're testing in?
We do ask the SLPs to try to find a quiet room.
There's no such thing as a quiet room.
Possible in
even the broom closet is not quiet.
Nothing's quiet in the small.
So that's one of the issues.
So what happens when it's a little bit, I mean, if it's a lot noisy, you just cannot do the test there. But it most likely will be a little bit noisy. They may fail because with the background noise, especially for children who are very bothered by background noise, that is a problem. So it's a reality of hearing screening. You know, you do not have a portable booth that you can just pull out of your back pocket. It doesn't work that way. You have no choice. Working with the schools, you are going to work and find the best room. The best room is maybe not going to be perfect. You're going to work with what you have, and you will do exactly what you're doing, pass, fail, pass, fail, pass, fail. And if you've, you know, if you've accidentally, like, so you failed some kids that, in fact, they were hearing it, they just, you know, it's fine. They'll be caught again, and we'll just confirm that they were really hearing it, and it's no harm done, so.
Do we test it on ourselves first, like, as we know our threshold? Do we test it on ourselves?
You know, it's never bad, especially at the beginning of the day, it is never bad to test your equipment. Okay, because the worst thing that could happen is you're onto your 10th child and you realize, wow, that's really interesting that they all have flat timps. And why is that? Oh, something wasn't plugged in the right place. Or, you know, so not a bad idea as a general rule. Now, if you're testing on yourself, it'd be also kind of nice to know that you have more or less of a normal hearing system because, or not, and just be aware of what those results would be. But not a bad idea to just, you know, quickly check your equipment, make sure your right headphone and left headphone are plugged into the right place, that type of thing, you know. And these are errors that happen to everyone. And if you take that minute to check it, then it's done and you don't have to worry about that throughout the day. Okay.
What's a normal, like if it was in your booth, what would you consider a normal screening pass? A 20 or would you 15? Sometimes we get back hearing tests where the kids, your pure tones are at 25, and they say, oh, that's normal. What's considered a normal if they come for a hearing test?
Normal hearing for a child is 0 to 15 decibels. So if we test them, we are really looking for results between 0 and 15, and we will usually try to find the threshold, the lowest threshold that they actually hear. So in the booth, we're really looking for that. If it is a very difficult child, maybe we will screen at 15 decibels. So we will run across at 15. If we have a few more moments at the end, then we'll play around and see if we can get them to answer it better than that. But at least we know that at 15 they answered. You know, if they have one threshold at 25, at that point it's a lot of discussing with the parents and finding out their history and so on. But that's a kind of a whole other... We'll be talking about that in another class. Okay. So, let's look at some examples. Timmy is sitting down, and both his ears look like this. Are we happy?
Yeah.
So far, we're happy. You do some tympanometry on him, and you get this. So, both ears are not exactly the same. Are we worried?
No.
We're not worried. Good. The pressure is not identical. Or a reason to panic? Why aren't we panicking? So large range, and these are within
normal
limits. So far we're happy. And then we do pure tone testing, and we get this. So he has thrown the block in the bucket, at 20 decibels at all of these frequencies in both the right and left ear. Are we happy? Are we passing him?
Yes.
Yay. Jenny shows up, and now her left and right ear have this. Are we panicking?
No.
But she has wax.
Should make a note.
But she has wax. I think I said if there's wax, you panic. So why aren't you panicking? It's not that much. How come it's not that much? Tell me. Okay. It's not obstructing. You can kind of see the eardrum. You can see just a very small film of wax. We're not panicking. Okay. So now we have ear canal volumes. Are they normal? And we have pressure, middle ear pressure. No, it's not good. Too negative. So what do? Make a note. And now this is what they're giving us. So what do? They have failed the screening. We do not tell Jenny that she has failed the screening. Okay? If you're giving out stickers, everybody gets a sticker. Okay? Trust me on this one. You do not tell Jenny that she failed. Okay, yes.
So as with other types of testing that we do, when we want to say, we'll use the word activity or instead of testing, is there another word that we can refer to ourselves that isn't fail?
You know what? I honestly wouldn't say anything. I would say you did a really good job, because they did. They did do a really good job. They responded for you exactly when you wanted them to respond. It's not their fault they're not responding within normal limits, but they did the task the way you asked them to do the task. They sat for you. They threw the block in the bucket when they were supposed to, when they heard it, and that's when they heard it. So they did a very, very good job, and they get a sticker because they did such a good job. Goodbye, Jenny. Have a nice day. Yes?
Clearly went on to get that she's hearing at 30 and 25. We would just leave that value blank and say she didn't respond.
Yes. Yes. Is that what you were?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about this, but again, just some reminders. Actually, this is a good time for me, because Anne reminded me that I did something last year and I had completely forgotten to bring it up, so I'll bring it up right here. Your otoscope. If you hold your otoscope like this, I'm missing the tip, the plastic tip here, so pretend there's a plastic tip, and I am testing someone. If I come at them like this, okay, this can be scary. If, as I'm doing that, I lose my footing, I'm going into their ear with this, okay? So you do have to be careful that you always have your own body and your own arm under control. You can't really control the child, because we're not going to tie them down. So you have to at least be able to control yourself. Now, if you're coming at them like this, and so far everything's fine, and now the child moves into you, okay, so you were in the ear canal, and everything was great, and you're looking, and now they move towards you. Ouch, okay? So, not a bad idea to get into the habit of holding the otoscope like this. So now, when you come up to their ear, you are leaning your hand against their ear. So if they move towards you, your hand is also moving towards you. So worst case scenario, if they move really fast, that's coming out of their ear, okay? It's tricky at first to get the hang of this. It's a bit odd because everybody wants to hold it like this. That's how you hold everything. But if you get into the habit of holding it like this, if you are going to be working a lot with small children, once you do this a few times, you will be more comfortable. And that one time that it happens, you're going to say, thankfully, I was holding my otoscope like that and I didn't stab right into the ear canal, because the skin inside the ear canal is very, very tender, and so if you scratch it, you could make it bleed. It's sensitive. If you've ever, no scratching inside your ear, nothing smaller than your elbow, but if you happen to have gone in there with a Q-tip or something like that, you will notice it's very sensitive, even for us as an adult. So if you hold the otoscope like this and you make sure that your hand is always against their head, you will move with them. And if from some bad luck you trip onto the chair or something and you go forward, then you will push the child away from you at the same time. Okay? So, workstations in some quiet rooms, as quiet as possible. What are we doing about this? Are we working in partners?
We're sending four students at a time. So really they're going to have to divide themselves up around the different stations, but there will be a chance for two to work together if they want to do that on the
I would think that for at least half the students that you are testing, you will be okay on your own. But you will have the option to bring someone else in to help you if you're stuck. It could be because you're questioning something or because you need an extra body to write while the other person is doing play, audiometry. Okay. Always make sure that you do otoscopy first. The rest is not earth-shattering. In terms of order, but the otoscopy is, because you want to make sure that you know what's in there or not in there. You don't want to put yourself in a situation where you've pushed something into the ear by accident. Okay? Listening checks on all audiometers. So you're setting up your equipment in the morning, you are testing it on yourself to make sure the right sound is coming out of the right earphone. You're doing a little TIMP to make sure that your machine is working well. Sometimes just a little bit of humidity in the machine can set it off, so you might as well know that 15 minutes before your first client rather than into the third client. Okay? Is your otoscope working? So even before Anne said to me, "Oh, if you want, I don't know if you want to show them anything, but you know, I'm not even sure there's batteries," so we turned it on. And so, you know, this is not earth-shattering information. You just double-check to make sure that your light is working. Okay, cleaning supplies, and possibly that could mean Purell as well. So that's something to be discussed when, you know, amongst your...
We do have some Purell in our current kit.
There is Purell in the current kit, so that's wonderful. So for you and for the kids, because, again, depending on where you are, you're not going to have time to wash your hands probably between kids and so on. So good idea to have that. Okay, so stay in contact with the teacher and know what's going on. Find out who's absent, who's there. Have the forms been signed? Sometimes, depending on how you're set up and the time constraints and so on, sometimes an SLP can go into the classroom, and if there's an SLP at the school, sometimes ahead of time they will go into the classroom and tell the kids this is what's going to happen. So then, when they see you, it's not so stressful. Okay, this I think that the SLP and or the teacher can help you with. If they feel strongly that there are students that should go first because of attention issues, because they do better in the morning, you know, for whatever reason they feel, then for sure, go with that and make sure you do those people first. So we looked at the worksheet. We looked at this is all in your package that Anne gave you. And then if there is a screening that is failed, then there's something that goes out to the parents to let them know that they need to follow up. Go ahead.
So when we get there, will there be copies of this for every child?
I believe you bring it with you, right?
I send it to you. So you have copies. SLPs also have them, so they have copies. And we try to make sure there's some in the kit, in the package that we bring with you all the time. Occasionally that gets down a little. Have to let Lily know if it's down so we can make more copies and put it in there.
We usually make them at the school because we staple them together in the machine. It's way easier for us.
Okay. So there's... It's good that the school has copies, so worst case scenario, you know, someone's running out to make copies for you. Sure.
I'm hung up on that sticker thing that you said before. From experience, I just want to tell you that there's often kids in the class whose parents don't want them to be screened for whatever reason. Just for your own sake, for the kids in the class, you should make sure that you go back to the class, and even those kids that don't get a screen, get their sticker in there, whatever else you want to give them. I mean, it's little things like that that make it easier for us afterwards and for the teachers in the class, because you need the teachers on your side.
Yeah. You don't want them to stand out just the same way that you don't want to tell them they failed.
because maybe there's only two or three in the class that will fail, and so they don't need to stand out amongst the others. And so the same thing, if you're giving anything out like a sticker or anything, everybody gets a sticker because everybody did a very good job. Yes?
From experience with children like this as well, whenever you're taking those notes, not putting an X where, you know, if it, they failed, if you just leave it blank, I think usually helps as well because they'll be looking at their page and they'll pick, I failed or I something.
And maybe possibly, you know, I'm not sure if you're set up in such a way where you can be in a position where they're not seeing what you're writing necessarily, or it's another symbol, you know, whether it's a question mark or something else, because it's true. That, like I said earlier, they are very smart and they pick up on these things. They will ask you, why did I get an X and my friend didn't get an X? Okay. Fair? Straightforward? Do not forget to write down the child's name on the form. And all of us are chuckling. All of us who've been there are chuckling because you do it, because you're so busy. And you just, you know, you start to do the test. You say, oh, I'll write down Johnny's name in a second. And now you're on to the next child. And all of a sudden, at the end of the day, you find the sheet and you said, who is that child that I forgot to write his name? Always write their name down so that you're not fishing for papers at the end of the day. Okay?
And your name as well.
Is there a place on the form for the student to sign, Anne? Is there a...
I think,
on the, there's a student position as well as the SLP.
So there's a place for you to put your name down. Yeah. That's something that you may want to do ahead of time, where you take, you know, 20 sheets at the beginning of the day and just write your name on 20 sheets and hang on to those 20 sheets for the day or whatever the case might be. So just one less thing for you to worry about when you've got the child in front of you.
You say 20 kids. What's about a rough number of kids that we could end up seeing in a day? I mean, how much time does each of these take? About 5 minutes? How many kids could we see?
How many kids are we going to see in a day? I do not know the answer.
Usually, there's at least 40, and the highest number, I think, that anyone got through was 65.
It depends on the rhythm you get into.
Yeah.
You know, like you were saying before, one screener, one child. Well, what I found worked better for us was we had two doing tympanograms and the otoscope in one room, because I had the luxury of two rooms, and then two in the other room doing the hearing screenings.
Okay.
And they went pretty fast. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I had three students coming at one time. Mm-hmm. And so then one was downstairs getting the next group
so
ready.
Usually it's at least, you know, two or three classrooms, kindergarten classrooms.
It went pretty fast.
It goes pretty fast. But they have, like, recess breaks and lunch breaks and all of that, so they're not always with the kids.
Sure.
This is just a logistics question with regards to what you were just saying. If we only had one classroom at our disposal, is it possible to have two stations, or is that going to make it too noisy? Like, if we have one tympanogram station, one pure station.
You will, if that's what you have, that's what you have. If you have only one room to work with, hopefully the room is a little bit larger than this. I don't know exactly how big the classroom is, but you obviously will want to put as much distance. And then, you know, it may be that you're doing, that you're doing emittance at the same time or trying to, so that you can then say, okay, we need some quiet here for the test. You may have, it's a little trickier then, for sure. You're going to have to communicate amongst yourselves to keep the sound down as much as possible and remind each other to stay quiet.
Issue even with speech therapy in the schools, by the way. It's not just for finding a place to work in the
schools. Schools are not a quiet place.
Okay. We talked about using Purell and, you know, so that the kids are not passing germs from one to the other, and for you as well, so you are protecting yourself, you're protecting the other kids. You want to make sure that the tips are clean. In your case, I believe that we have enough tips that you're removing it and you're putting the dirty tip in the dirty jar and then the clean one. Sounds funny, but you know what? All of a sudden you're not paying attention. You accidentally take the dirty tip, you stick it in the clean ones. Now they're technically all contaminated, okay? So just be careful with that. Just take an extra second or, you know, keep them big sign, dirty, clean, you know. We do it in the booth. I mean, it sounds simple, but when you're working and you're just doing it sort of a routine, it can happen very quickly. Certainly, are you throwing your tips out?
We are washing them a number of times.
Okay.
Solution.
Okay, so plastic tips most often are rewashed because of budget. Okay, if budget was not an issue, we would just throw everything out. But if you look in a child's ear and you see something particularly bad, okay, you see blood, you see great discharge, just throw it in the garbage, okay? We'll be fine. We'll figure it out at the end of the year, okay? So we're not throwing the child in the garbage. We are only throwing the tip in the garbage, okay? So, you know, again, use your judgment, but if you are seeing a lot of discharge, don't worry about that one tip not being clean. Throw it out, okay? There's no need. So same thing, you know, the emittance tips are much more expensive and they come back here and get soaked and disinfected and cleaned. So there is a cleaning process for all of this that we follow. For the earphones, that's a little bit trickier. The big rubber earphones that touch their head, you know, ideally you would wipe the headphones down with alcohol between children. The issue with that is that if we do this enough times over the years, it breaks down the rubber on the headphones. So you're kind of stuck between, you know, but it's a good idea to do it because we do not have any kind of disposable. They do exist, but again, it's adding to the budget. So in this case, you know, you really should be wiping the earphones down between the kids. Your equipment is calibrated, so you do not have to worry about that. Biologically calibrating it is meaning that you've listened to it and you're hearing it at 20 decibels, so this should be good, unless you know that you have a hearing loss. Be careful with the equipment. The more it gets dropped, banged around, and so forth, the more it is likely to lose calibration. Make sure you have all your extension cords, because you are going to be in rooms that have different situations. Some schools might be able to help you out, but go ahead.
Because I was going to mention this to Anne last year and I forgot. If you could possibly, and I don't know how you're going to do this, but the problem with the schools, also the older schools, there's not enough outlets. And we were scrambling to find power bars. Mm-hmm. Because we have the two machines and, you know, all kinds of things that are, the computers are already in there, whatever, some of the rooms. We were scrambling to find power bars, so I don't know if you can arrange to put maybe one power bar in a box or something. Again, I know it's a budget thing.
We're going to need to invest in maybe a couple of power bars. Yeah, I think we'll be able to figure something out. Yeah. We'll get a donation of power bars. if the pure tones are abnormal, send them off. Find out what's going on. We need to get them checked by an audiologist to make sure that this is not any type of permanent hearing loss or any type of hearing loss that needs to be really worried about. If the otoscopy or emittance is abnormal, they do not necessarily need to see an audiologist right away. Really, they need a doctor at that point to confirm, is this an infection? Let's deal with that medically. After the infection is gone, then if there's still issues, we can move them on to audiology. If there is a combination of these, then most likely they're going to the doctor first, dealing with the medical issue first. Then we make sure we test them in audiology to confirm that they, in fact, have normal hearing. We do not want them to go through elementary school with even a mild hearing loss. Okay?
Can you go to an audiologist without a doctor referral?
If you go to a private clinic, most private clinics will accept you without a doctor's referral. Many pediatricians will also refer to private clinics, often if they have one that they're comfortable with or is near their area they work with a lot. Otherwise, they will give you a referral for the hospital audiology, and you know, usually it's pretty simple. The pediatrician will give a referral. It's not usually a big issue.
Okay, so we send them to the pediatrician first?
Yeah, their doctor for sure.
Yes, no, some even public system audiologists in Chateauguay, for example, the hospital takes patients without referral.
Oh, okay. So she's just commenting that some hospitals may very well take you without a referral as well.
it's never a bad idea to send them back, especially, you know, if they have a pediatrician, which they're very fortunate if they do, then it's a good thing to send them back to the pediatrician. The pediatrician always knows what's happening in this child's life. So the pediatrician hopefully will agree and say, yes, we'll send for a hearing test. Okay? So I'm not going to go through this again. Just keep, you know, read through this list. Make sure these are just reminders, basically, to not forget things that are easily forgotten as you are caught in the whirlwind of this. Everything's really calm until the kids come in, and all of a sudden it becomes very busy.
So I know that we're going to be taking care with cleaning our materials and everything, but to what extent are the bacteria in ear infections really contagious and really strong and dangerous?
If you take care of keeping your hands clean and so on, it's not an issue. You will be fine. It is not a highly contagious place to be, okay? If you happen to notice lice, take the child immediately to someone who is in charge and indicate this to them, okay? And that is something that, as we know, you may very well run into in an elementary school. All right. Okay, so I'm trying to leave a little bit of time, but we do want to go into the other room.
I'm not sure we're all going to fit in the room, so I'm trying to think of a way to divide us up, and I thought maybe if people whose birthdays fall between January, March, April, May, June, to half the first half of the year, the first 6 months, will go in with Lillian first to walk through the stations, and hopefully she'll divide you up nicely if you're not all the same, and then after that, the other group will go in. So the early part of your birthday will go in first.
Okay, early part of birthdays.
First 6 months. I'm